Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and our paradigm shifter tonight is familiar to a lot of you. You keep telling me how much you love our discussions with Randy Masters and his wonderful, sacred geometrics and his vibrational approach to the different portals of dimensions with his music, with his compositions and jewelry. And oh my gosh, Randy, welcome to Paradigm Shifters again.
Thank you, Veronica. We initiated the very first paradigm shifters.
We sure did. And Randy actually initiated my relationship with Bob, so that was also nice, eh?
Yeah.
And we're so excited to have you here. And I know that you're going to be showing up at a weekend gathering called, Star Clinic? Mm-hmm. Do you want to start? Should we talk about that first and then get into some nuts and bolts of multidimensional beingness?
Yeah.
Or did they use nuts and bolts on that?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Certainly. This will be March 22nd through the 24th in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay.
And William Henry will be the featured speaker. And then a whole lot of different speakers talking about, you know, what it is to be a galactic human.
And what is it to be a galactic human? And what are you going to do there, Randy? I bet you I can guess, but you tell us.
Well, I'll lead meditations. I'll work with light and visualizations. I'll have tuning forks and certain sound tools to play frequencies of different numerical understandings and grid understandings and Kabbalistic understandings and, you know, in other words, with sacred numbers and certain kinds of relationships. So there'll be sound empowerments that have explanations as to what the numbers are for and what's going on, ways of balancing different kinds of and activating different kinds of energy fields.
Are you going to be doing this throughout the gatherings, throughout the seminar, or do you have...
Yeah, I'll be doing probably three or so different talks, and each one I'm doing different things like that.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about being a galactic human. What exactly does that mean?
Well, on one level, it's not being geocentric in terms of the human experience, being something limited, restricted, or quarantined here on Earth or something. It's more how we fit into the greater universe.
Hmm.
And that can be beings that look human, and that could also be an embracing and communicating with beings that look a little bit different. So at least if we restrict it for just a moment to various types of human beings as a species from all over the cosmos that look, you know, pretty much enough like how we look, that might be one thing. And I think there's all kinds of different heights and sizes and colors of skin and textures and many different things. And
like a big America. Well, I love the idea of being a galactic human being, but tell me this, does it also include parallel lives and our own multidimensionality? Or where's the line between ETs, different species, and that kind of thinking?
Well, I do think that certain people connect in with themselves in other dimensions, in other time sequences. And that can be an expanded self experience, including certainly thinking galactically. If there's a part of you that's in another star system and you meet that part of yourself, I mean, that's certainly very interesting. I mean, even just here on Earth, thinking of beings coming from all over the cosmos in some kind of way throughout history, showing up here for the reasons that this is sort of a garden planet with genetic experiments and more diversity of flora and fauna and species of every kind on one planet, from what I hear, is very unusual for any planet to have the biodiversity that we do.
Really? Are we a GMO species ourselves?
Well, you know, that's a very good possibility. Yeah. It's a matter of, well, was that purposeful in order to come out like we are at this stage? That there were higher levels of intelligence behind that, not something that dumbed us down, but something that put a particular configurations together in such a way that we could dimensionally interact. We could forward consciousness in a way that had perhaps not been forwarded before. Also to be able to mix different kinds of beings from different star systems together and see what kind of a new mix. In other words, as a way for creation to experience itself expanding. From what I've heard, a lot of life on a lot of planets mainly has one or two civilizations on the entire planet. Hmm. And then we look at Earth and consider, well, if beings came here, let's say there were cataclysms in our solar system, and for 3D-type life, this was the only planet that was in the cradle orbit, the right distance from the sun with the right temperatures and conditions for the kind of physical life that we're familiar with. And so this began to be the place like a galactic hospital. I mean, certainly there was Maldek, the asteroid belt that was a former planet.
And yeah. Isn't that between, where is that?
That's between Mars and Jupiter.
Yes, okay.
And other kinds of changes. Then we hear of life on other planets now, but being in a different dimension. In other words, in Venus, there's all kinds of gorgeous temples and whole civilization, but not in the 3D, but in a 4D, 5D, or 6D, some other dimension of Venus. Mm-hmm. The 3D there is, what, 700 and some degrees Kelvin, I mean, extreme meltdown, hostile for sure by our normal standards. But another dimension of Venus, supposedly extremely beautiful. There was a being from England who became a lama or something that wrote a whole book, My Visit to Venus, a number of years ago, and talked about all the different temples and the extraordinarily beautiful beings. And I think the Greek mysteries are full of that. The stuff with Aphrodite and so on, and even the goddess Venus, are based on two different streams. One, Atlantis and what dimensions that Atlantis was in touch with, and also Venus, but not exclusively Venus. So a lot of the feminine codes of Isis come through and step down through Venus before coming to Earth. There's even talk that at one time Venus is where the Earth is in our solar system, and it sort of exchanged places. Hmm. That Venus was one time in this, what they call the cradle orbit, a certain idyllic distance from the parent sun that allows for a different type of development of life.
Well, I want to know something. You know, we talked about this for about 2 minutes before this discussion, but we know a lot about like concurrent realities. We hear a lot about concurrent realities, and you're speaking of that when you're talking about like fourth and fifth dimension temples and on Venus and so on, not in the 3D where we live. How can people learn to access different dimensions of reality and explore them a little bit? Can we?
Yeah, well, some people are doing various kinds of out-of-body experiences. They either train themselves or they are trained by someone at how to safely come and go and not get stuck in the walls in some dimension, you know, to get back here safely, intact, with all of their components. So that's one. Then, obviously, in the different states in the dream world, we go to places that I would say that's where we're having direct multidimensional experiences. And now the thing would be, how do you retain that information? How do you awaken to that information in the, quote, awakened state when you get up from what you would call the dream world and the dream state, and remember what happened, retain information, be able to communicate here about experiences that you've had. So I've had, you know, experiences like that since I was a small child. And so it's in me somewhere in my consciousness. Mm-hmm. And the task is to retrieve it and make beneficial use of that.
Well, is that... Is this so that, let me see, how can I put this? You are a real master of sacred geometrics and the use of those and the use of music to help transcend, would you say, the third dimension and also color. Can you talk a bit about those? Are those all portals or are those all train tracks for these different experiences? Or
I think those are certainly great vehicles. I travel with music, and I travel with geometries. I think those are ways of working with shape, mm-hmm. and that would be the shape science would be what's behind the sacred the geometry. You know, the power of resonances conveyed by shapes, or also where those shapes can influence resonances by the shape of the field. And then
The field is shaped by, for example, the jewelry that you make, which is amazing.
It has an influence on the field with angles and colors and the materials in the stones and frequencies in metals and stones and such and colors that come out of it as a way of vibrating with certain types of correspondences, depending on what correspondences I might be working with, to vibrate that in the consciousness and maybe to help awaken deeper aspects of our consciousness. Memories and bring them out to into the surface where we can work with them and play with them.
So if you bring up deeper consciousness, then can I move through different dimensions more easily?
Well, I would think that would be the possibility, and certainly you would want to be in harmony with your own guidance, higher selves, other components that would guide you in navigating like that so that you wouldn't end up somewhere that you weren't trained to navigate. I hear that a lot of the beings that work with the sound current, which is something that I work with in meditation, where you listen to the inner sound that you hear inside, the audible sound current or the audible life stream, as it's called. And at some point, if I progress to a level that I have not done in my soul, and I might not have the soul memory, or at least access to it yet in this life, guides will show up and help me so that I don't get into problems. I mean, if you, let's say that you go into a certain dimensional realm where your thoughts are instantly manifesting, that could be dangerous for people who don't have better control over their thoughts. You know, they could be worrying about something, then all of their worries are manifesting instantly in front of them, and that could be a terrible experience that some people might not actually get over. Right. I've even heard about that in the pyramids in Egypt, that there are some dimensional rooms that you get into those rooms at certain times, and when if the portals and the gateways or the stargates are open to other dimensions, beyond the third dimension at least, that whatever you're thinking is happening. I've heard about that down in the pit underneath the pyramid. If somebody's afraid of snakes, snakes appear. Spiders appear. Whatever you're thinking about can manifest because time and space is altered there.
Well, you were talking about sacred geometrics, so it is perfect at this point to talk about pyramids. I want to get back to the sound stream as well that you were talking about, but can we talk a bit about the pyramids and the groups that you lead and what are the access points? How does that work with people?
Well, I'm done co-led three trips to Egypt. I'm scheduled to do another one this coming November. There's a lot of places, not just the pyramids, but there's all kinds of amazing dimensional access ways in Egypt. They've said that they think that only about 30% of Egypt has been uncovered, that 70% of the buildings and structures are still under the sand.
Huh.
So you can imagine
that's how exciting.
Fast. Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
And I've had some dreams where I visited some that haven't been found yet in my linear stream. But the dreams were of such detail that maybe it was a future dream or I went to another dimension. But, it, you know, that dimension indicated it was, you know, contemporary Egypt. So there were different temples where the portals were built into the temple. So I believe what they did is beings from different dimensions came here and visited through those portals and showed up and taught people. The Osiris Temple has a particular geometry in it, and that's supposedly older than the pyramid. And there was another one that went with that, a temple that was around the Sphinx. That's no longer, there's very little of it left now, but it came from an even more ancient civilization. And the one at the Osirian Temple in Abydos has like a portal in this particular room I know from geometries of portals. And my suspicion is that they evoked or invited or set the field in such a way that, like an elevator, beings could show up and come and go. And I imagine there was a lot of that type of activity in the ancient days, where civilizations from other planets, other star systems, other dimensions could come and go in those buildings. And I think they still do in some places that are generally not observed by the public. I believe there are rooms that still function and areas where this kind of activity still continues.
Have you had any personal experiences like that whilst you do these trips to Egypt?
Well, on one trip, I was at the Karnak Temple helping to lead a trip with Sekhmet, a specific meditation, and one of the women had some challenges and was outside the room, and the Egyptologist and a few people, one of the temple priests in a robe, was there helping her. And although I didn't see this, I was inside, but several people on the trip did. One of these temple priests walked from behind her right through her body.
Oh, my.
And people on the trip saw it.
Oh, my.
Well, who is this guy, I say? And where does he go when we leave? You know, I've seen him there a couple of different times that I've been there, the same being. But I thought that was very interesting. These beings are not always, you know, what they seem. Some of them are guardians, but I think some of them are dimensional guardians. And they know who you are, and if you need to do something, they can help you do it. Or if they need to prevent something, they can prevent that. And in chanting in the king's chamber on my second trip there, laying in the sarcophagus, the power and electrical power in the pyramids went out.
Laying in the sarcophagus?
Yeah, and chanting. I was looking up at the ceiling and chanting, just myself and my friend Paul Hubbard, who co-led the trip with me, were in the room preparing it for a ceremony. And I said, well, this is a good time for me to explore all the different sounds and do anything I wanted to do. I had a bunch of time there by myself. And so as I was making sounds, the electricity went out and this electrical blue-white light formed on the ceiling. And that same electric blue-white light formed when we did the Sekhmet ceremony. And so I found that to be quite interesting. My friend Roy Smith, in the 70s, sat on top of the Great Pyramid at a very auspicious time politically in the history of things that were going on the planet.
How did he feel?
And a being came to him and talked to him up there.
Wow.
And so that's very interesting. And another friend of mine, Indio Salazar, who was a Mescalero Apache and also a Lakota Sioux chief, he was a chief in two different Indian nations, was walking around the pyramids at one time, and he fell through the sand, and he ended up in this underground chamber where there were pillars that were lit up with light.
Oh, wow.
The pillars were lit up, not like they had lights on them, like you might light up a building in the capital in some city, but I meant the pillars were glowing like the light was coming out of them. And he said, well, Grandfather, how did they build all of this stuff? And the voice came and told him from the top down.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and there's all kinds of, I have lots of friends who've been there on different expeditions and things have happened. Peggy Black was singing there in the pyramids one time and had a bunch of Egyptian officials with her, and the ceiling opened up. You know, in other words, here's this granite ceiling, and all of a sudden you can see the stars. And everybody could see it, the Egyptian officials. So they said, well, come with us, you know. And they had her go into different rooms and say, here, sing, do your singing, do your toning. You've come here to sing the temple in some kind of way, to open the temple, to sing it, to make the temple sing. So they unlocked places that weren't, I guess, open to the public and wanted her to sing because they realized that whatever toning and singing and whatever she was doing opened up something dimensionally. I can imagine looking at a ceiling that's granite or some kind of stone, and all of a sudden you see the stars. You know, what happened to that ceiling?
You might question your perceptions a little.
Yeah, but especially when you have people around you observing the same phenomena, you know, you weren't just in an altered state.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is really exciting. So, I'm really interested in sacred geometrics, but also there's no way of separating that from sound, is there? I mean, you're talking about how the chanting, the sound, actually moved the granite, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, sound, those rooms, a lot of them were constructed to be activated by sound.
Mm-hmm.
The Saqqara temple is especially that way in Egypt. And I would go to different little cubby holes around the temple exploring the sounds, and like about the size of a phone booth, and I'd make certain sounds in there, and people all over the temple grounds could hear me. And I was told by the Egyptologist that I was actually going into rooms where they used to do the ancient sounds.
Hmm.
And I was doing that same kind of a thing again.
Well, Randy, do you think, well, of course, I want to say, well, you were there in other lives, were you not?
I think that's kind of part of it.
So do you think that the...
parallel, maybe. Maybe I'm still there in those other lives, and it only appears to be linear for one type of reality construction, that it's simultaneously going on.
Huh.
And maybe I tapped into some of that simultaneity, and it bled through or into this one, or a portal or a stargate or some kind of a passageway opened up there for something to flow back and forth.
Hmm. It's fascinating.
Possibly.
So when they were all constructed in the first place, talking about multidimensionality or ETs or beings from wherever, they must be using sound throughout the universe in order to plant their flag or to, I don't know what I'm asking, except there's a lot of healing that goes on there. And I just am wondering about sound. Let's talk about sound, that it is used for healing, it is used for building, it is used for creation. Is it used for just connecting the different dimensions or awarenesses of different galaxies?
I believe that a very advanced beam can make particular sounds and material will show up, and our material will be able to be manipulated, softened, hardened, shifted by how the sound is vibrating and where it's coming from. So it's possible to make a certain sound and then something just appears.
Mm-hmm.
It would also be possible to make certain sounds and cancel the gravity around very heavy blocks and they would just float into place. I mean, that Edward Lead Scanlon that built Coral Castle in Florida, I believe, tapped into how to do that.
Hmm.
And that was one of the secrets. And he did it all himself. Moved the giant blocks, built the whole thing, and took it all apart and moved it one time all by himself overnight. So he discovered something, and I believe that the sound can manipulate the matter, mm-hmm. like cymatics or kymatics, and I also believe that certain resonant shapes are put together so that sound will have a different behavior in those rooms. There's rooms in some of the temples in Egypt and a lot of places in the world. I'm just more familiar with all the studies and trips to Egypt, so I mention that, but there's lots of places all over the world that have these same configurations, especially Machu Picchu's, all kinds of things, totally centered around conscious use of sound for what's happening. But some of the ones in Egypt, like at the Sobek Temple along the Nile, every room was for a different chakra.
Hmm,
so you
really?
Could go into a different room, and it would resonate differently for doing healing work with that particular chakra.
So our vibrational bodies, which a lot of us are just learning about, that was their science already way back then, or?
Yeah. Well, they, you know, in the Egyptian mysteries, they had over 360 different senses.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that was the exact number, in fact. You know, like how a color tastes or what a color sounds like. So that's a mixture. So we take all the senses we have right now and mix them together in every possible combination of different numbers. And I believe that's the greater sensorium that expanded galactic beings have had access to.
Hmm.
But it doesn't mean they had access because they had advanced technology. Because they could be very advanced with their technologies and flying machines, but their spiritual consciousness may not be.
So, I thought they were very, very spiritual, but we don't know, I guess, eh?
I think some were, mm-hmm. and maybe some were maybe more, they were technologically advanced, but not spiritually adept.
Hmm. How interesting.
There's a mix there. So, you know, when we were talking about galactic humans, what that is. I'm interested in the spiritually adept humans who can do things even without tools, just because of the body temple, the consciousness temple that they are, the divine blueprint that they were created from being more fully blossomed and up and operating, where abilities we have access to, abilities that some would only dream of or some have never even heard of, that is our birthright at a higher level of our own being. And that's what I'm interested in, seeing that kind of being emerge here on the earth, both from many of us who have been around for a while and having more of that 95% come online, and also the new children being born who are coming in with a lot more of this wired and kind of ready to come online.
Well, it's interesting. Do you think that it's kind of like steeping ourselves in the third dimension and then choosing to evolve? That's the way it is, that we've needed many, many lives? Or do you think that some of these people are dropped in like multidimensional bleed-throughs coming in with greater awareness in order to perk the collective?
Well, I do believe that there's that careful implanting, on the good use of the word implanting, of beings, like that's what Yeshua, Jesus did, you know, put him in the mix, and the whole planetary being sphere changes because of one being that has such a alchemical effect that the entire planet vibrates differently because of what they're connected with. I mean, some have even said that he was a manifestation of the actual being of the Son. You know, Jesus Christ, Son, S-U-N, of God, basically a physical configuration that we recognize as a human stepped down out of the soul of the Son. So that's perhaps one of the secrets of who he was, and came here not as a regular human, but having enough of the attributes so people could see how an expanded being and what that could be. So he vibrated a completely different possibility into the matrix here.
So let me ask you this. If we use the right geometrics and sounds and that sort of thing, can we enhance our own evolution? Because Jesus always said, anything I can do, you can do better, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Can we do that? And how would you recommend we do that, through using sound and...
The conscious use of it, when you're doing the sound, asking to be part of a greater circuitry that guides the use of the sound through you, what you study, who you play for, how you play, what you listen to, how you interface your consciousness with the musical instruments or your voice, to become a vehicle where certain of the persona dissolves and a higher aspect of that being can come present and serve as a conduit for that music. We could even play differently. I like the way the child played in the movie August Rush, and all of a sudden he could just pick up different instruments and play.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, that's a demonstration to me. You know, without all the training, you just could open a certain kind of field and play things, and I believe that that's a possibility as well. Certainly with the geometrics, we're looking at ways of waveguides that shape the sound and how sound behaves in different environments, and also how to amplify sound through the different geometric configurations. You know, I was told that in the ancient Egyptian times, a lot of the temples actually glowed with light that was created by sound.
Wow,
not by
I
light
love
bulbs
that.
Or candles or torches, but literally the sound vibrated in such a way that it made the pillars glow with light and lit them up, and that was a level of light cities. But yet you could go up to a pillar, for instance, and it will be stone, and you could knock on it, and it would be hard by our agreement, but it would be behaving differently in the way that the sound would activate and literally flip on a switch, and that the certain musicians were trained back then how to play music in such a way that it actually turn the stones on. In other words, the turn the temple lights on as making the stones and the walls and the floors and the ceilings vibrate so that the inner light within vibrated and became visible and lit up the whole temple. And then some of those lights would go way out into space.
Wow.
And could be seen by different beings.
And when was that? Was that like 3,000 years ago? Or?
Oh, I think even older. I don't know the last years that, let's say, that type of phenomena may have occurred. It might have been 10,000 years ago, and then a lot of that stepped down and was lost till eventually you had a lot of priests faking it, dressing the role, but were not masters.
There were no YouTubes of the old stuff, huh?
Yeah, that we know of. I mean, there could be Akashic records in some of those buildings that have, I've heard of discs that have been found that have all of this history on them.
Wow, really? I love that idea. But that makes sense because they came in with very high technology.
Yeah.
Right?
So I don't think anything is lost. I believe there's just different ways of hiding things in plain sight. You know, you just have to tune properly. One of the things we did in walking around is we'd shift our vision when we would look at a wall full of hieroglyphics and line up our fingers to focus our eyes, and then the hieroglyphics would pop out in three dimension like the magic eye books.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
And then what did you see? Did you see what they meant?
Well, you would see a three-dimensional image from a two-dimensional one.
Wow.
Yeah, and you can do that looking at books where there's pictures of the hieroglyphics, too.
Hmm.
I played around with that. So I believe the hieroglyphic language was what was called a waveguide language. In other words, it guided the sound. And in other words, if you go into certain rooms in those temples, and if you were to erase the hieroglyphics completely, the room would behave differently.
Hmm.
But with the hieroglyphics in place, sound will behave differently in that room.
Well, so and the consciousness of how sound works with lines and intersections and so on was really, they were very adept at that then, hey?
I think that's the point, yeah. So you have hieroglyphs that are engraved into the wall, and then you have the other bas relief and whatever, where you have the hieroglyphics that stand out from the wall. It's two different types. And both of them influence how sound behaves in the different rooms. So you can tone and go into different corners of a room and even whisper. And the sounds, if you're in the sweet spot, the sounds can amplify.
Hmm.
So we would do that when we would go on these trips, go places.
And what happens to your consciousness when you do that?
Well, if you do it long enough,
mm-hmm.
you start to go into an entrainment. You can go into an altered state of consciousness. You just have to do it long enough to really get the wave going.
And what's long enough?
Well, I would say like 20 minutes.
Okay, so did you do that, Randy?
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
And many people did, and they went into some way, very deep states and felt like they had were just made of light. Not everybody, just certain people who had the discipline, instead of running around, to stay put, find the sweet spot, search the tone using their voices, get certain kind of resonance going, and then play and interact with that resonance until it vibrated their bones.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
but it takes
very
time
exciting.
To do that. It wasn't like you just sing one quick note and boom, like going over to a light switch and flipping it on. You needed to tone for a while, and it may perhaps enough to get your brain waves to shift.
Hmm. And you love going, eh? Have you gained in consciousness by doing these several times?
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I felt very at home in certain places. And there's a room that I was born in another lifetime. I've been in that room three times. I know the scene and everything.
Wow, so you got the images and the...
Yeah.
So it's interesting because your home, which I have been to, is very, you've been very astute about getting the resonance really impeccable. Do you want to talk about that? Because that's something that people can do. They can't all be in the pyramid and sleep in the sarcophagus.
Yeah, and you don't need to. You know, I mean, I believe in taking the temple to the people. I also believe in going to this place in your sacred heart to where you can be anywhere in the universe and you don't even have to leave the house.
Okay.
Some people, it's purposeful for them to send their body to different places.
Mm-hmm.
For what comes through them, what comes to them, and the interaction of you and the place, the power of place is the expression.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, we do that in the dream world. We can do that in meditations. I conduct meditations in my workshops where people travel. We go back to Atlantis, or forward to Atlantis in the future, and visit the Zephyr tuning fork that is on a big platform, a huge tuning fork. You walk upstairs, and here's this giant tuning fork. And then what the tuning fork does is it tunes to your unique soul vibration and plays that back to you, so you get a reset.
Hmm.
So that can all be accomplished to varying degrees of success and phenomena.
And where is that, Randy? That's in the future.
Well, at one level of it could be the future Atlantis, and then there's the what we consider to be a past Atlantis and different stages of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
I more like direct people to go to a stage of ultimate coherency, peace, beauty, harmony with the world, the universe, at that time, not a turbulent time in Atlantis, and go up to that temple in a ceremony and stand before that tuning fork and let it tune you, and then ask that something from that be retained, so when you come back out of the meditation, you know you've been there. You're not fooling yourself. Even if you pretend that you went there, you can pretend so thoroughly that it has the same effect.
Hmm.
So I have respect for imagination and pretending, that it's not faking it. It's just another way of getting the consciousness to open up and vibrate differently.
Vibrate to the image you're creating, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we travel to that and meet with that tuning fork.
Hmm.
It's called a Zephyr tuning fork. And that was its function. To people would make pilgrimages to that temple just so they could get a reset.
Hmm.
I think that's a great idea.
It's a wonderful idea, but it just occurs to me that most of us don't think that I am a unique vibrational current, a unique frequency, right? What if we thought of that all the time? I wonder if we really would amp it up a little better.
I think in owning it, yeah. And then also asking for the full beauty of that uniqueness from our original divine blueprint to be able to blossom and manifest. So we learn how to water that garden by whatever we do, how to tend the garden, how to weed the garden, how to respect it, and respect our body as a sacred site.
Hmm.
You know, and so therefore we don't have to go somewhere unless we're called to physically go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The old days were that people went on migrations to these sacred sites and passed information, and you shake hands or hug somebody from somewhere else, and you transfer information. You touch a stone somewhere, and then you go to another sacred site and touch a different stone, and the information passes through your circuitry.
Mm-hmm.
And to your circuitry.
It's a diksha, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Empowerments, yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Passing on the Shakti, the information, the hologram. And so there's a lot of people doing that these days that have been to every single continent and either led or joined or were on sacred journeys on every, including Antarctica and the Arctic, all around, experiencing, depositing information and sometimes opening or working or repairing portals or doing ceremonies. And there's, of course, been a lot of probably hokey ceremonies that disturbed locations because people did inappropriate rituals or had levels of nonsense going on in their field that they brought to the area, and then those areas need to be cleared of that. Doesn't mean everybody going there doing a ceremony knows what they're doing or is doing something that's in alignment with full permission and consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Consciousness is a big deal. When you said repairing portals, too, it occurred to me that are these the portals, let me see, these are portals to dimensions, these are portals to different galactic centers. What are they?
Yeah, I believe there's portals all over the planet, and some of them are in the temples or in the grounds around the temples or in mountains. You hear about people up on Mount Shasta, and all of a sudden a stone wall just kind of dissolves and they walk through.
So it's time and space that they're that it's changing, right?
Yeah.
The portal too?
And when that portal is not open, you could go and knock on it and it's just a stone wall.
Mm-hmm.
But under certain conditions, whatever those might be, and evoking particular things, etc., all of a sudden a stone wall dissolves like the ceiling did in the pyramids to Peggy Black when she was there.
So it could be a portal opens because you're vibrating or like what Peggy did, chanting.
Yeah.
Or just setting up the resonance.
Mm-hmm. And who you are may have a signature that's known. And you arrive somewhere and that area knows you.
It's like Joe sent me, right?
Yeah. And you know, and you find your name there, and it's like you were supposed to be there, and you showed up on the right day and everything. And it was known that you would show up that day. So people have these experiences, and some of them are extremely profound.
Wow.
So, I mean, tending portals and making sure that tomfoolery doesn't go on, and that people do not abuse or do things with them that are not right within galactic law. I believe there are portals, two different star systems that act like an elevator.
Huh.
And you know how to, if you know how to activate it, and it's time to activate it, and certain stars and lineups occur, you can beam back and forth between here and there using the portal transportation system.
And your passport is your own vibrational coherence or integrity.
Yeah, and who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you don't know who that is.
So let's talk about
who you are. You know.
Yeah. So this jumps me to sound healing, which is a very, very powerful system, is it not?
Yeah.
And is it a matter of getting that resonance to work with your inner self?
And connecting. The thing is, you're working with directed vibrations, you know, in and around the body, on the body, near the body, that can affect all the different systems in the body, and certain particular types of blockages can be cleared, that the sound can vibrate in such a way that it vibrates loose holding patterns, belief systems, stuck energies, stagnant energies, so that the spiritual currents that the universe is made from and runs on are allowed to flow properly. When the flow is restored, a lot of times the healing is that restoration of the flow. In other words, depending on what's okay for a given person,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether you're willing to be healed, whether it's okay to be healed, whether you want to be healed, whether it's the right time to be healed. And healing could be just an attitude. You know, I'm sure some of the people that Jesus healed, Yeshua, they may have still had leprosy, for instance, but they were healed because their consciousness was healed.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't mean that the leprosy would have to be healed.
Did you read Dying to Be Me yet?
No.
Anita, you know what this book is, eh?
I've heard it just briefly described.
It's just a near-death experience. I happen to be reading it right now. But in that, she's talking about how, because she was literally on her last vestige of life with so much cancer. It was incredible when this happened, and how she explains it. And I meant to ask you about this today. How she explains it is she became a being, and it was just this beingness, and that she has to continue that practice, which is separating herself from all the beliefs and substructures that she's had around her. Is that, and I kind of think, into the vibration of who she is as the essence of her being, you see?
Rather than the illusions and the acquired behaviors and belief systems and attitudes and such.
Yeah, and Wayne Dyer had leukemia, read her stuff, and got better.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so she, but I feel like it's relevant, like we're talking about, I know you work wonders with tuning forks,
mm-hmm.
and sound, and you're also a composer and quite a magical musician of your own, on your own. And your work is really profoundly vibrational, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I originally was just interested in the music, and then took me a lot of years of dropping in spiritually in myself and my journeys before I could really look at the nature of the tone itself. Other than getting a good tone on different instruments I would play. Mm. Yeah, it took me a while because I was interested in the musical patterns And now to be able to be satisfied like listening to just one tuning fork or listening to a stone, you tap on a stone. Michael Tellinger has this wonderful documentary about these places in South Africa that they're 200,000 year old.
Oh, wow.
Where they mine gold and did things where the slavery and the gold mining on the planet started with some of the off-campus beings that were here, I call them.
Off-campus.
And, yeah. And he held up these two stones. One was kind of triangular, narrow shape, like a real narrow, large, several foot long arrowhead. And another one looked like a bone, like a leg bone or a femur bone or something. And when he struck them, both of them gave off the same tone. And I, you know,
oh, interesting.
Checked it out, and I had some tuning forks made to the mathematics of what I suspected possibly the fundamental frequencies could have been. And although these two stones looked totally different in terms of their shape, they gave off the same frequency. To the best of my hearing, it sounded like it was exactly the same frequency.
Wow, are they the same color? Same
sharp up in the area around 600 to 600 and something hertz, maybe between 600 and 630 hertz or something in that area. And so I have a bunch of tuning forks made to grid math and things that I've researched that I think theoretically might be what they were doing. There was something, the reason that those stones gave off those sounds. So I believe that that civilization 200,000 years ago had high technology of sound, and maybe they even used the sound in their mining and processing of the gold.
Or maybe they used it to create the gold.
Now, that's also a possibility.
Mm-hmm, that's what
and
I
to
think.
Cause the gold to grow. So you can look under Michael Tellinger, and it's very fascinating.
Wow, that's really interesting.
What he's talking about in the whole grid. It looked like a big circle. If you look at that region of South Africa, mm-hmm. like up from an airplane view, it looks like a circuit board.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
A giant circuit board.
So it looks like somebody was there before from a different civilization, eh?
Exactly.
Mm.
I mean, it's proof of it. It's not, you know, speculative. And they've dated it and everything.
So when you say proof of it, where are they from?
Well, that's a good question.
It's a bit cheeky, isn't it, Randy?
Well, you know, where are they from? Are they any place that we know? You know, something we're familiar with or some place that we haven't become familiar with? I'm not sure.
But I think also we have it. There's also the time-space thing. We don't know who's come from the future into the past, and the past into the future, and from different dimensions, do we?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the travelers may be coming from our own future selves, coming here to help wake us up.
What does it mean to be awake? I wanted to ask you two things, all right? So I was going to say, what does it mean to be awake? But the other thing, I don't want to forget this. You mentioned earlier sitting and listening for the authentic tone in some silent, I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, that's in the audible sound current and listening to the life, the audible sound stream meditations where you're listening deep inside your being to make contact with sound current. And at first, you might hear sounds that it could even be your own nervous system that you're listening to.
Okay.
Okay, now that's not it yet.
Okay.
I mean, those are interesting sounds, but that's not the live stream yet. You drop in deeper and deeper, and all of a sudden, you hear these sounds. It's like a magic carpet, and you can ride on and travel on those sounds. Now, they say that the true path home to the heart of the Creator and the origins of all creation is the sound, and that the light shows you the path. So light and sound work together, but the real fundamental is sound, and that's what I teach from. And that's what a lot of the Sikh gurus, and I'm not a Sikh, but the Sikh gurus who teach the sound current meditations, that's where they're coming from, and they have through history.
Have you done this yourself?
I do that. This is what I teach at the main meditation.
And that'll be at in Tucson.
Well, we'll see. What actually happens depends upon who's there and what the consciousness field really is calling for. And I amend my plans on the spot if I need to, based on my reading of the field.
Okay, working with the current the current resonance. Can you tell people at home how to work with that themselves? Is it possible for us to do that, or do we need
to? Yeah, they can get a book by Eric, E-R-I-C, Gustafson, called The Ringing Sound.
Okay.
That's a paperback. That's one book, and they can get another book by Alistair Conwell, C-O-N-W-E-L-L, called The Audible Life Stream. The Audible Life Stream by Alistair Conwell. Mm-hmm. Those books are completely dedicated to the meditations and the practices, and having people be able to just start at square one, you know, Life Stream 101, and work with it. And they're beautiful instructions on how to work with that, and how to meditate with it. And, you know, you're basically closing your eyes and looking up through the third eye area, but not at the third eye, but up through that area in the brain, and listening deeply and dropping in and kind of down the rabbit hole in your own self.
And when you can do that, do you, I guess what I mean is, do we have access to our own ability to flow multidimensionally or become consciously multidimensional?
Well, yeah, I mean, all the answers to all those questions that we're posing and musing about are all accessed from the sound current. Mm-hmm. There isn't anything about the nature of creation in the universe that can be, it can all be known through the sound current.
Hmm.
Everything. And some questions you won't need to ask. And you'll just, it will come to you. Yet other ones that may seem important now might not be, because you have dropped into a deeper level of the fundamental nature of the creation. It's such a heart of the creation that you can separate out different thoughts as mental noise as opposed to fundamentals that lead you deeper in your reunion and union with Source.
Wonderful. Oh, my. So what is awakening? I'm not going to drop that question off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big talk these days. And do you have faith in humanity to be able to awaken?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that in that awakening, all of the problems that we have, the solutions will be brought out through the truth of who humans really are.
Do you feel that the, for example, the big shift, the Mayan calendar shift, the 2012 thing, and all of that, do you think it really heralded that we will have more facility for waking up collectively?
I think that was a promise that a lot were looking for. And on 12/22 or 12/13, they woke up, many woke up and found that they were in the same area code with the same bills before them to pay and certain other challenges that had not shifted. And I think that was very depressing for a lot of people. And they therefore have had to learn to drop into something else, rather than if they had any kind of a savior complex, thinking that off-campus beings are going to come and lift them away and take you off planet, then scrub the planet, then bring you back here when the conditions are better, or change the economic system. So on 12/22, you know, that all worked. There's homework to do and individual work to do. And I think a lot of people were really led astray by the disinformation and those using tension and fear and augmenting and dreaming up and making up various stories, including claiming that these came from various channel beings. And I think a lot of people realized that there was much more deception that they had bought into over the years, and it's time to get real.
Well, that is an awakening thing right there. While you were talking, I was thinking, because I often feel like we are waking up as a species more and more, but it's probably going to take quite a while. But when you were talking about the sound currents or the live, the audible, whatever it was you called it, you know, that
audible life stream or the sound current.
Yeah, I'm thinking, is that not something that is going to move through, is moving through our species in terms of, I know it's always there, but I mean that moving through our species in terms of shift, it may be shifting slowly the entire species?
Yeah. And I think that that is possible. It could be very dramatic. It's time for that level of a wake up, and also time to wake up enough to be the proper custodians here and not be spoiling a planet and ruining the atmosphere, the air, the water, the food on the very planet that we're living on.
Right.
And there needs to be such a wake up that that custodianship can be resumed properly and sufficient actions can be taken to correct for the ego's illusion of separation that's gotten so out of control. It's willing to poison the water, poison the air, poison the food,
and
so on.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we have to end this. And of course, whenever I'm talking to you, Randy, I want more time with you. So we'll have to work that out, eh?
Yeah, if we just get our stopwatch, you can just stop at any time.
And for everyone listening, Randy's, well, tell them your website, Randy.
www.universalsong.net and also www.sacredwindchimes.com.
And then this coming 2 weekends from now, you're going to be in Tucson, Arizona at, what is it called?
The Star Clinic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. And people could look that up if they want to see what's going on, because it's going to be live streamed as well.
And there's it'll be live streamed, and there's also a link on William Henry's site that you can just click on it too and see the different things.
Okay, and it's also called Crystal something. Oh, I don't know the other name of it. Put it on my website as well. But I'm looking forward to seeing you in Tucson, Randy.
Oh, that'll be big fun.
Yes, and thank you so much for tuning in as a paradigm shifter again. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you all for listening. Now we really have to get with our own inner note, right, Randy?
Yeah, not to believe anything they heard.
And don't believe anything.
But to consider it, because considering it could produce a shift.
And Randy did say we have like a flying carpet in there, so let's all get quiet and get on it.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. This is Veronica Entwistle saying you can be in touch with me at veronica@veronicaentwistle.com or on my website, Veronica Entwistle, with a little button on it that says, this is new for me. It says, Ask Veronica. So let me know what you think, and we'll talk soon. Many blessings. Good night.